From Quality Radio Productions, it's an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. It's the Upstate Radio Theater, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. Getting the hour underway with some classic comedy, as we have an episode of The Great Gildersleeve. This was the first spin-off series of radio's golden age. Originally, Gildersleeve, portrayed by Harold Perry, was first introduced to radio listeners by way of Fibber McGee and Molly. The series was created in 1941, also airing on NBC, the same network which aired Fibber McGee and Molly at that time. The series ran from 1941 through 1957. In 1950, Harold Perry was lured away from NBC by CBS Radio in part of what was known as the Great Talent Raid of the late 40s and early 50s. This created a problem, however, as while Harold Perry wanted to leave NBC for CBS, Kraft Foods, the sponsor of the series, wanted to remain with NBC. As a result, Harold Perry spun off his own radio series, which was short-lived, while the Gildersleeve series continued until 1957 with Willard Waterman starring as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. This broadcast, episode number 238 in the series, originally aired on February 26th of 1947 on NBC, with the usual cast, Harold Perry, Walter Tetley, Louise Erickson, Lillian Randolph, and others. It's titled Getting Rid of Bessie.
The Kraft Foods Company presents The Great Gildersleeve. It's The Great Gildersleeve, starring Harold Perry, brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company, makers of a complete line of famous quality food products. Did you ever have one of those mornings when you wake up about an hour or two early, it's still cold and dark, and you try to go back to sleep? You turn over and pound the pillow, and then you get to thinking about all the work you've got to do, and first thing you know,
I might as well get up.
And that's why we find the Great Gildersleeve sitting down at the breakfast table this morning at 8 o'clock sharp.
Hiya. Gosh, what happened?
Good morning, Leroy. Marjorie.
Unky, what's the matter?
Matter? Nothing's the matter. Bertie, let's get going here, shall we?
Bessie, Mr. Gildersleeve? My goodness.
It's not particularly early.
Oh, Unky, for goodness sake. You're never down before half past.
This is ridiculous. I'm down here at 8 o'clock every morning, and none too early at that.
You want the paper?
No time for it. Well, I might just glance at it.
Leroy's got the comics.
No time for those. I'll just look over the front page.
Morning, Mr. Gildersleeve. You caught me a little bit tricked in between, but here's your orange juice.
Thank you, Bertie.
If you'd let me know you wanted breakfast early, I'd have had it all ready for you.
It's not particularly early, Bertie. It's 8 o'clock. I have to be in my office at 9. That will do, Leroy.
Well, if I'd known you wanted it early, I'd have had it all ready. I'm whipping up some eggs and toast, and I'll have it in here directly.
Fine.
Only if you just let me know the next time.
For heaven's sake, you'd think it was the middle of the night.
Hey! Ooh, Abner's pretty good today. I can't stand little Abner. That Daisy May makes me sick chasing him all the time.
I don't like to see you two wasting your minds on that. Where's the mail?
The mail?
Yes, mail. Letters. The stuff the postman brings. Where is it?
Unky, you know the postman never gets here before 9 o'clock. It only shows you how early you
got. It's not early. I am not early. Is that understood?
Yes, Unky.
All right, eat your breakfast. Morning, Floyd. Just give me a quick trim, will you?
Sure, Commissioner. Climb right up in the chair. In a hurry?
Not particularly. Why?
Well, you said a quick trim. You want it quick or you want it good?
I want it good, but I haven't got all day.
What's up?
Nothing is up. I have an office to get to, that's all.
Pretty early for you, just the same.
It's not early, and I don't intend to argue any more about it.
Well, gosh, what did I do? Okay, Commiss, you're the doctor. Just relax.
All right, but make it snappy.
Okay. You want to look pretty, don't you? I know you want to look pretty. I know why you want to look pretty. I'll make you look like a 25-year-old college boy. How about a butch?
What are you talking about, Floyd, or is it nothing, as usual?
You don't have to kid me, Commissioner. Man comes rushing into a barbershop an hour before his regular time, wants to look pretty. Don't take a building to fall on me.
What?
Take it easy, Mr. Gildersleeve. You ain't the first guy ever got excited about his secretary.
My secretary? Bessie? What kind of... There's never been the slight... Oh, my goodness.
I get around, you know.
Listen, Floyd, if you've heard anything, I can explain it.
I heard plenty, but you don't have to explain it. I understand it. I had a manicurist in here once. Pretty soon I was looking at her all the time. One day I almost cut a guy's ear off. Had to let her go.
Floyd, I am not involved with my secretary. I suppose you heard something about some candy.
Maybe I did.
Well, this is what happened, Floyd. Bessie had a toothache one day last week, and she sent in a friend to take her place.
Yeah.
This was just for one day, you understand. She was a friend of Bessie's from out of town. A stranger in the city.
Lonesome?
Confound it, stop trying to twist this thing.
Careful, Commish. Might stab you.
Well, naturally, I felt grateful to this girl for helping out in this emergency, replacing Bessie at such short notice.
Yeah.
So I thought that as a token of my appreciation, I'd get her a little candy.
I heard 7 pounds.
That Peavy, he has no more
discretion.
Now,
keep your shirt on. I didn't hear a thing from Peavy. You know he never tells anything.
Where'd you hear it then?
Never mind. So you bought the dame a crate of chocolates.
I simply left them on her desk. Expected that to be the end of it. But there was a mix-up. She didn't find them. Bessie did. And Bessie got the idea somehow they were for her. And she misinterpreted and... Floyd, I'm telling you the truth. I've never even looked at Bessie.
Where there's smoke, there's a fire.
There's no fire. There's no smoke even. Probably sounds fishy.
I'll say.
Yeah. But there's nothing in it. Floyd, don't say anything about this, will you?
Me? You know I never talk, Commissioner. We're just... Just keep the thing between you and me and the lamppost.
There's nothing between you and me or the lamppost either. Oh, what's the use? This is terrible. Doesn't look good for a public official. Doesn't look good for Bessie either. I'm afraid I'm going to have to let her go.
What can I do for you this fine day?
Nothing, Peavy. I'm just worried, that's all. Did you ever have an employee on your hands?
Well, I've had assistants from time to time. I had your nephew Leroy in here one summer. Remember?
I remember. He ate himself sick the first week. No, I mean a regular assistant.
Oh, well, I've had people working here from time to time.
Did you ever have one that was unsatisfactory?
Well, let me see. Unsatisfactory is a pretty vague description. I had a man that stole.
I guess he was unsatisfactory, wasn't he?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. In many ways, he was the most satisfactory man I ever had. Put up a nice prescription. Good head for prices. Neat dresser. He had just the one flaw.
Did you fire him?
Oh, no, no. He emptied the cash register one night and went to Mexico with a dancer.
Well, that's one way. My problem is different.
I didn't know you had a problem.
Well, I have.
Not thinking of going to Mexico.
No! Peavy, what are you talking about?
Nothing.
Have you heard anything?
No.
Well, if you hear anything, it's entirely unfounded. Disregard it.
All right, Mr. Gummisby. I will. Man buys candy for his secretary, that's his business.
Peavy, I'm going to fire my secretary. I've never had any interest in her whatsoever. Besides, she's incompetent. Believe me, I'm just trying to make up my mind whether I ought to replace her.
No.
Have you ever fired one of your assistants?
Let's see. Tolliver quit. He wanted to be a dentist. Kaplan moved to another town. Rodney married one of my customers. I consider that unethical.
Oh, criminal. Did you ever fire anybody?
Well, it seems to me there was one. Oh, yes, Mr. Clement. That was one thing about him. He liked to be called Mister.
Uh-huh.
Worked for me 3 years, and I called him Mister the whole time.
Well, did you fire him for cause? I mean, did he come in intoxicated, or mess up a prescription, or what?
Oh, no. Mr. Clement never drank. If he did, I never knew it. It amounts to the same thing. Good man with a prescription. I hate to admit this, but I fired Mr. Clement just because I didn't like him.
I thought you said he worked for you for 3 years.
He did, and I never liked him a single day. He was one of those fellows that knows everything and tells you all he knows. Calcium chloride is anhydrous, he'd say. I know it, I'd say. And then he'd tell me something else.
Nothing more annoying than a fellow telling you a lot of stuff you already know.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. He used to tell me stuff I didn't know. And I'd pretend I knew just because he made me so mad. And then I got to looking up stuff to tell him. And it was preying on my mind, Mr. Gildersleeve. I just had to let him go.
Well, how did you get rid of this model employee, Peavy?
And that was easy.
Huh?
One day he said to me, I can still remember his voice. He said, "Do you know the light from the planet Venus takes 20 million years to reach the Earth?" And I said, "Mr. Clement, you're fired."
Well, maybe that's the only way. Much as I hate to do it. If only she weren't so darn sensitive. She cries if you even look at her. Well, just have to be firm, that's all. Say, maybe I could make her resign. Yeah. Good morning, Bessie.
Good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve. You're early, aren't you?
Ye gods, how can I be early? I've been to the barber shop, I stopped in at Peavy's, and I walked the whole way.
Yes, sir, but it's only 9:30.
For your information, Bessie, that is the time at which I customarily arrive. Why aren't any windows open?
Windows? Well, it's a little cold, but if you want them open...
I do. Can't run an office without oxygen. Where's my mail?
On your desk, sir. Shall I open all the windows?
Certainly not. Use your head, Bessie. Use your head.
Yes, sir.
I feel like a louse already. What'll I do? Dictate to her? Yeah. Dictate too fast, maybe. That's the thing. Bessie, what are you doing? Come in here with your book.
I'm opening a window, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, one is enough. Come on, I want to dictate.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. The window's stuck a little.
You should open them every day, just to keep them in working order.
Oh, yes, sir.
Let's see. Take a letter to Anderson, Fender, Telfant, and Bean. Dear sir.
Yes, sir.
Got that?
I'll get it from their stationery later, with the address.
Well, let's see. Replying to yours of the 21st, the devil do they want? Beg to advise that the sinking fund, first amortization bonds with which the Summerfield Reservoir was constructed, will become renewable as to the prior lien with respect to Series A, whereas Series B will necessitate anterior action. Who sent this letter? Oh, lawyers. I can't answer this. Isn't there anything I can't answer? Nothing in here but bills. Confound it, why is it so cold in here?
I opened the window.
Why'd you do that?
You told me to.
Yeah, that's right, I did. What's this here?
The petty cash account.
Oh? What's it doing here?
There's a shortage of $2. I want to ask you about it.
A shortage? A shortage of petty cash? Uh-huh. Bessie, do you know that's the most serious, terrible thing that can happen in an office? Bessie, do you?
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve!
Bessie, I didn't mean it. It's nothing, Bessie. Bessie, I didn't mean to get excited. $2, what does that amount to? Trivial, Bessie. Go wash your face.
I don't know what happened. I looked in the box.
Oh, that's all right, Bessie. It walked away. It's all my fault. Well, I certainly handled that nicely. But by George, I'll do it tomorrow.
got great news, cheese lovers. Kraft American is back. Kraft American, you surely remember.
Did you hear that, John? Kraft American is back.
Kraft American? Are you sure you heard right? Tune up that radio. I want to hear.
And since the war, Kraft has been hoping for this day when they could offer you again their famous pasteurized process American. American with the medium mellow cheddar flavor you've hankered for. And dependable cooking quality that toasts and melts to perfection. Yes, your old favorite, Kraft American, is here again. Look for the blue half-pound package.
Mark, Kraft American.
Look for the two-pound loaf.
Mark, Kraft American.
And when you buy a portion or sandwich-sized slices from a five-pound loaf, always ask to see the wrapper.
Mark, Kraft American.
You no longer need to make do with substitutes. The food store near you now has genuine Kraft American with the mellow cheddar goodness you've wanted for so long. Get some tomorrow. Well, it's another morning, another day. Time to be up and doing. Gildersleeve is up, but he isn't doing. He is sitting at the breakfast table alone with his coffee cup. In the bottom of the cup, there is a single drop of coffee. He's saving that. He's been nursing it, in fact, for half an hour. The children have long since left for school. Bertie has cleared the table, all but his cup. She has swept the carpet right up to Gildersleeve. She has swept around Gildersleeve.
In your way, Bertie?
No, sir. Sit still. I got other things I can do.
Just finishing my coffee here.
Yes, sir.
I don't suppose you've got another drop or two out there in the kitchen.
No, sir. You cleaned the pot, but I could make some more.
No.
Wouldn't take me 5 minutes.
Let it go, Bertie. I don't really want any more coffee. I guess I've just got to face it.
If you got something to face, maybe a little more coffee would help.
No, I shouldn't. I drink more than 4 cups, it keeps me awake all day.
Beg pardon?
Let it go, Bertie, let it go.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you act like a man got something on his mind.
Oh, I have, Bertie.
That ain't like you.
I have a very disagreeable task to perform, Bertie, and I dread it. It's always unpleasant to have to fire somebody.
Yes, sir.
Especially someone who's been in your employ a long time.
Yes.
There's nobody really to blame. It isn't a question of that. I know I'm not an easy man to work for. My standards are pretty high, but...
Mr. Gildersleeve, you can put your mind at rest.
How do you mean?
You don't have to fire me. I quit.
Bertie!
Lord knows I've done the best I can.
Bertie, wait! Oh, my goodness. Bertie, listen, you've got me all wrong.
I may not be the best cook in the world. But
Bertie,
I'd like
you
to
are.
Know where you're going to get a better one.
Bertie, listen. I wasn't talking about you.
Working in this house ain't no bed of roses, you know.
I know that.
People hollering for meals and all eyes, the phone ringing, the doorbell ringing, and electric guy's got a busted car.
I'll fix it, Bertie, right away.
I know I ain't as young as I was, but can't nobody say I don't do my best.
Well, nobody said that, Bertie. Now, just...
There's just one thing I'll say for me. I do my best.
I know you do, Bertie. We all know that. If you don't even...
Yes, sir, I do my best. I ain't perfect, but I do my best.
Oh, but you are, Bertie. You're wonderful. That's just what I...
I ain't like some people to take the money and laugh up the sleeve. Things I me, I just do my best.
Yeah. We're all agreed on that, Bertie. There's no argument about that whatsoever.
My best is all I can do.
Yeah. We all know that. That's why I start...
I do more than that.
Yeah. Bertie, will you do one thing for me? Will you try to calm down and listen to me?
I do my best.
This whole thing is a misunderstanding, Bertie. I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about my secretary. I never had the slightest intention of firing you. Nothing could ever be further from my mind.
What you getting all excited about?
I wasn't excited, Bertie. You were excited.
You can't get me excited because I got a clean conscience. I do my best. I know I do my best. That's my conscience.
But we don't want to fire you, Bertie. I told you that.
I get work other places. You know, I get plenty of offers.
Well, I know that, Bertie. I know that only too well. But now I'll tell you what you do. You run up to your room and lie down for a little while, Bertie, and let me clean up these breakfast dishes, huh? I wouldn't mind a bit, you know. You've been working pretty hard. You get a little rest.
No, sir.
Why not?
I ain't going to have folks saying Bertie lets other folks do her work for her. That's one thing about me.
You do your best, yeah. All right, Bertie, have it your own way. You do the dishes, and I'll go fix the electric iron. How about that?
Up to you, Mr. Gilsey. You the boss.
Are you kidding? Oh, what time is it? Oh, getting late. Due at the office. Say, how would it be if I fixed the iron this evening instead?
You the boss.
All right, I'll do it this evening without fail, Bertie. Got to get going now. Remind me. Wait a minute. Everything's all right, isn't it, Bertie?
What's that?
Everything's all right, isn't it, Bertie?
What did you say?
I said everything's all right, isn't it?
Far as I know.
We're still friends.
Far as I know.
You'll still be here when I get back tonight.
Far as I know.
Joking, of course. Well, goodbye, Bertie. Goodbye. Brother. If I ever fire anybody again. Oh, well. Wait a minute. Haven't fired yet. Gosh, if I only hadn't hired Bessie in the first place. Maybe I should give her another chance. Maybe when she gets used to the job. Yeah. After all, only been there 3 years.
Gildy.
Huh?
Gildy.
Oh, hello, Judge. How you been? I'll just say to her, now look here, Bessie. In fairness to you, I think...
Gildy, want to ride?
What? No thanks, Judge. Only going a few blocks.
Now so am I. Climb in.
Well, I want to take you out of your way.
You won't. I'm going right to City Hall.
I'd really just as soon walk, Judge.
Nonsense.
I'm almost there.
Make up your mind, will you? You're tying up traffic.
I'm not tying it up, you old goat. You are. I was walking along, minding my own business.
Excuse
me. Oh, all right.
Well, shut the door.
Let's go, Horace. Oh! Hey!
I didn't see the light change.
Well, thank you very much, Judge. I can walk the rest of the way.
Stay in, you fool. I want to talk to you.
Hey, what's your idea? You crazy or something?
No, he's drunk.
You never put out your hand.
There's a law on this town, Bud. When the light turns red...
Don't quote the law at me, my friend.
Don't call me your friend.
Come on, Horace. The light is green.
Blue. Stalled it.
Oh, for heaven's sake, let me drive. You're choking it. Come on.
There. There we go.
Judge, have you got a license?
Certainly I've got a license. Why?
I'd feel much safer with Leroy.
Ha.
Hold it, hold it. You're going past the place. Oh!
I'm sorry, Gildy. I don't know what I was thinking of.
The next time you have the car checked, Judge, you better have him check you, too. Well, don't think it hasn't been delightful, Horace. Could have done it quicker on foot, but it wouldn't have been near so exciting.
Wait a minute. I want to talk to you.
What about?
What's this story Floyd's telling around about the water commissioner making passes at his secretary?
Darn him. I told him to keep his mouth shut.
That kind of story can do a lot of harm, Gildy, particularly to a man in political office. And don't you ever forget for a minute that yours is purely political.
Oh, I don't know.
Little scandal and you could be bounced out of there so fast.
But the whole story is false. I told Floyd that. There's not a word of truth in it.
Be that as it may, Gildy. And I'm not saying I believe you.
Oh?
The point is not whether the story is false or true. The point is, it's believable.
What do you mean?
It sounds like you.
I resent that.
I'm only telling you this for your own good, Gildy. You know how the mayor would love to get something on you.
What am I going to do, Horace?
It's up to you.
I guess I've got to go through with it. Well, say.
Say what?
Judge, you don't need a darn good secretary, do you?
I've got one.
But this girl is wonderful, Horace. Been with me 3 years. Takes shorthand, typing, filing, answers the phone.
No, thanks.
I could quit myself. I could resign and leave Bessie there in her job. The next commissioner would be sure to fire her. And we'd both be out of a job. I could... No, that's no good.
After you, Commissioner.
Oh, thanks, coroner. Confound it. Why did this thing have to come up? Well, I'll just have to be tough, that's all. No room for sentiment in these matters. What are we running here, an office or a young lady's seminary? Hire them, fire them. That's the way an executive handles it. That's the way Truman does it. I wish Truman would do this. All right, let's cut out the shilly-shally in Throckmorton. There's only one thing for you to do. Just walk right in there and say to her, Bessie, you're fired. It's the only thing to do. Well, go ahead and do it. Well, I will. Well, go ahead. Okay. Bessie, you're fired. Where is she? Bessie! Bessie! Found that girl. 10:30 and she hasn't showed up yet. I'm going to have to let her go. How does it look for the department if people come in here and...
Good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Bessie, do you know what time it is?
Oh, I can explain, Mr. Gildersleeve.
After all, what are you running here, an office or a young lady's cemetery? Seminary. Let this be a lesson to you, young lady. If things don't improve around here, we'll just have to start looking around, that's all.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, I don't know what to do.
Now, now.
You know,
now, Bessie, nobody's talking about you leaving. I just... Bessie, are you listening?
Mr. Gildersleeve, do you think a woman can combine marriage with a career?
What's that?
Lester says no, but I read in a magazine where Kathleen Noyes said...
Wait a minute, Bessie. Wait a minute. Who's Lester?
Oh, he's this boy.
Boy?
He keeps wanting me to marry him. Oh, I didn't tell him I would. I only said I'd think it over. I told him I wouldn't think of quitting my job, Mr. Gildersleeve, and leaving you without
it. Bessie, there comes a time in every girl's life when she must think of herself.
Oh, but I just couldn't.
No, the water department will struggle along if need be. Love must come first, Bessie. What kind of a boy is this Lester?
Well, he works for the gas company.
Sounds like a fine young man. Do you love him? Of course you love him. It's just as plain as the nose on your face. Why, you've been in love with him for 3 years. I'll testify to that. You haven't known whether you were coming or going. You haven't known which end was up. You haven't known...
I've only known Lester for 2 months.
Oh.
Oh, it's very hard to decide. I do kind of love him, I guess, but then there's my career, and Lester's so bossy. He doesn't think I belong in an office.
I'm with Lester.
Oh, it's so hard to know. Should I just throw away everything and marry him, or should I...
Bessie, I shall merely say this. If you don't marry this boy, I shall discharge you.
You think I should...
In fact, I think I'll discharge you anyway. Bessie, you're discharged.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve!
Get your pay, pack your things, clear out now.
Oh, thank you.
That's all right, Bessie, anytime.
The Great Gildersleeve will be back very shortly. During the month of March, we Americans will be asked to contribute $60 million to enable the Red Cross to carry out their 1947 program of help to those who need it most. One phase of Red Cross work which you may not know about is their service to veterans of our armed forces. Able-bodied veterans receive assistance in personal and family problems and financial aid while claims are pending or delayed. Last year, this aid was extended to more than 1 million veterans and their families. Over 80,000 hospitalized veterans will this year be given the benefit of the skill and attention of Red Cross field directors. These workers coordinate the activities whereby hospitalized veterans receive therapeutic recreation and training, assistance with letter writing and shopping, and the helpful service of the Motor Corps. Veterans Assistance is a new and important addition to the Red Cross services with which you are so familiar.
I know all of you give generously whenever the Red Cross asks. Please do so again this year. Their need is as great as ever. Good night, folks.
Great job. played by Harold Perry. It was written by John Heaton and Sam Moore. The music is by Jack Meekin. Included in the cast are Walter Tetley as Leroy, Louise Erickson as Marjorie, and Lillian Randolph as Bertie. Earl Ross is Judge Hooker, and Dick LeGrand plays Mr. Peavy. Stay tuned in for Duffy's Tavern, which follows over most of these stations. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the Kraft Foods Company and inviting you to listen in again next Wednesday for the further adventures of the great Gildersleeve.
Good night, John.
Think of it, plenty of rich, velvety smooth ice cream always on hand for delicious homemade sodas and sundaes. It's easy when you buy the new Kraft product called Frizz, F-R-I-Z-Z. Yes, Frizz makes delicious ice cream right in your refrigerator. Real ice cream with plenty of milk and cream in it. Just add water, a little sugar, and freeze according to directions on the package. Made by an exclusive process that retains that fresh cream flavor, it freezes smoothly. 6 generous servings from one package of Frizz.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
From February 26, 1947 on NBC, episode 238 in the series The Great Gildersleeve, Harold Perry, our star, Getting Rid of Bessie, the name of the episode. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden era. I'm Jake Longwell. If you'd like to get in touch with the Radio Theater, you can do so by email. Our address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. That's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And you can find out much more info about the Radio Theater as well as other program offerings from QRP by visiting our blog and website at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. That's qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. If you want the playlist or streaming audio for this episode, please look for Upstate Radio Theater, program number 1908. We have more comedy of sorts to conclude this hour of old-time radio, as we have an episode of The Pillsbury House Party, starring Art Linkletter. Eventually, the series would be renamed Art Linkletter's House Party. This broadcast, which originally aired on ABC on October 6th of 1949, was taped in Southern California. And the recurring theme, if you will, of this episode, they're trying to find in the audience the oldest father with a child under 1 year old. Let's see if they succeed. It's an episode of The Pillsbury House Party, starring Art Linkletter, wrapping up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Come on in. It's the Pillsbury House Party. The Pillsbury House Party, produced and transcribed in Hollywood, presented to you by Pillsbury, makers of those wonderful new Pillsbury cake mixes, and starring Art Linkletter.
Well, it's Pillsbury time again here in Southern California, where the very first breath of fall in the autumn is in the air today, a little chilly, but we have a wonderful warm audience, and among them we may find today's winner of the weekly contest. This week, as you know, at the Pillsbury House Party, we're looking for the oldest father with a child under a year of age. You never can tell who we're going to find, so fellas, let's circulate up and down the aisle and find some fathers who have a child under a year of age and who is perhaps 30 or 40 or 50 or 150. What is the oldest that we find out there? They're make 33.
62.
That's pretty good. Any older than 62? 90 what? No, oh, I bet that's his seat number back there. This is the man who's 62 coming up now on the stage. Wearing a little goatee. How do you do, sir? Nice to see you. I haven't seen one of those little chin whisker adornments for a long time.
That's on account of an accident that I had last night.
Oh, so you wear... You have a couple of scars there, so you wear a little mustache. What is your name, sir?
Owen Jensen.
And where do you come from, Owen?
I was originally come from Utah. I was born in Pleasant Grove, Utah.
Uh-huh. And what's your business?
I was a tattoo artist for 32 years. Now I manufacture equipment, and I sell it to chinchilla ranchers and fur farmers all over the country.
Chinchilla ranchers? Well, no wonder you're wearing that little goatee. That's sort of a chinchilla. What are you carrying here?
Here's the Here's a write-up we got.
Oh, in the Los Angeles Examiner. It says that this is your daughter?
No. This is my son.
Well, I mean, you can't tell in the picture. It's a little boy or a little girl. That is your wife?
Yes, sir.
Oh, it says here, Dainty Dotties First. Circus fat lady smiles as her 9-pound, 4.5-ounce son, born in cesarean operation yesterday, voices his objection. Oh, you married a circus fat lady?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll be darned. I guess you met her because you were a circus tattooer?
Well, I met her through... She was also a tattoo artist, and she come to me to buy supplies, tattoo supplies.
And how much did she weigh?
Well, she weighed about 585 pounds.
When you fell in love with her?
Yes.
Well, you certainly got a lot there, didn't you? Think of all the tattoo territory there was.
I have tattooed her. She's tattooed
she
on her.
She is. Acres and acres, and all mine. Well, tell me, has she reduced any?
Oh yes, they reduced her a great deal for this operation.
In other words, most ladies gain weight when they're going to have babies. Yours lost.
She lost.
How many pounds did she lose?
Well, I think she lost about 125 pounds.
Oh, some people here would vanish completely if they lost that many pounds.
If you want some real identification, here it is.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Turn around and show the folks. He has tattooed inside his lower lip where it doesn't show, ordinarily, his name, your name. In other words, they will always be able to know who you are.
That's right.
And this is your first child.
My first child.
At the age of 62.
62.
And the circus fat lady.
That's right.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Believe me, that is an amazing human interest story. And I see you brought along the birth certificate of the child.
Yes.
And that proves that a lady who weighs 300 or 400 pounds doesn't have babies that weigh any more than the average baby.
No.
Uh-huh. Well, for being today's winner, we have several prizes for you to take home to Mama, a package of Pillsbury white cake mix to keep her weight down. Oh, you use it all the time?
All the time.
Fine. And here's a set of King's Men in gold flagons, the world's finest toiletries for men, for you. And for the baby, a full year's supply of assorted beech nut baby foods, 8 cases full, especially packed in sparkling Duraglass jars for convenient warming and storing. Compliments of Pillsbury. Thank you very much. Oh, isn't that an interesting interview, Jack?
Certainly is, Art.
You know what? I have an idea. I'm going to have Pillsbury tattooed right on your nose. Oh, that's television. We're getting ready for it. Who's our next guest?
Art, over here we have Mrs. Myers, and you better look out because she says she's a mighty good cook.
I'll bet you are. You look like a good cook. Your first name is?
Honor Myers.
Honor, that's a nice name for a lady, isn't it? Where'd that come from?
Oh, my grandmother.
Uh-huh. And you're from where?
Santa Monica.
And originally?
Chicago.
And you're a grandmother yourself?
Right.
How many children did you have?
3.
And how many grandchildren?
2.
How long have you been cooking, Honor?
About 30 years.
And can you bake a cake?
Yes, I bake, but I've had a lot of failures.
Along with the good ones.
That's right.
Who taught you to bake a cake?
Oh, I learned myself, I guess.
You know, your mother didn't teach you as a little girl? Uh-huh. Didn't they used to stick a straw in cakes?
That's right.
They don't need to do that anymore, do you?
No.
Uh-huh. You say you've had failures, but have you ever tried Pillsbury?
I tried it for the first time last Thursday.
And what happened?
I was amazed to find what a good cake I could make.
Without going to all the trouble
that's
that you
true.
Had. Well, of course, if you've been cooking for how many years?
30.
30 years. That's quite a switch for a lady. 30 years one way, and then you switch to a new way. And I hope that our listening ladies will take your advice, and I'm delighted to know that this is a true story from you, Honor. You live with your husband, or?
I'm a widow.
You're a widow now, so you don't make too many cakes.
Oh, yes, I do.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
For the neighbor kids?
No, for my daughters.
Good, good. I think it's important that no matter how long you've been cooking, you have an open mind about trying something new. And if you ladies have never tried Pillsbury chocolate fudge cake mix, I wish you would. All you have to do, and you check me on this, Honor, you just add milk. Isn't that right?
That's right.
You can't miss. Your results are perfect every time. And, of course, the same is true of Pillsbury white cake mix. Now, we want you to have a package of each, Mrs. Myers. And for being our guest today, a beautiful twin waffle iron to take home. Compliments of Pillsbury. Goodbye.
And Now Art Linkletter talks to our 5, 9 to 11-year-old school children who were brought here in a Tanner limousine from the Virginia Road School.
The what school is that, Virginia?
Virginia Road.
Oh, that's a public school, isn't it, Gary?
Yes.
My, you're a handsome-looking fellow. Stand up here and let me see how tall you are. You're how old, Gary?
I'm 11 years old.
What's your whole name?
Gary Judas.
Now, you have one of these trick haircuts where you comb it back at a pompadour and then suddenly switch it over in a sort of a ducktail. Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, it's pretty fancy. What are you aiming to be when you grow up, Gary?
I'd like to be an actor on television, an impersonator.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, that's quite good for a boy of your size, because by the time you're my age, we'll really have television, you think?
Yes.
Well, can you impersonate anybody?
Yes, I can impersonate Peter Lorre.
Well, let me hear a little of Peter Lorre.
I am going to kill you. I will take off your head and throw it in your face.
Well, I think that's a good start. Do you... It's a nice, pleasant outlook on life. Do you have any other impersonations?
Yes, I can impersonate Humphrey Bogart.
Well, let me hear Humphrey Bogart.
All right, Lloyd, come out of that bathroom and come clean.
That's Humphrey Bogart as a child. Who else do you have?
Jimmy Stewart I can impersonate.
Well, let me hear a little of Jimmy Stewart.
When I was a boy, my mother said crime wouldn't pay, yeah, at least as much as it used to. Yeah, yeah, I don't know what the word fair means, say. Yeah.
I think that Edward G. Robinson was passing there, right in the middle, said hello to Jimmy. Thank you, Gary. I think you're a fine actor. And Rhoda, what's your whole name?
Rhoda Corba.
Rhoda Corba. And I knew a girl once whose last name was Stump, and they called her Rhoda. That's the absolute Rhoda Stump. But you're Rhoda Corbin. How old are you, Rhoda?
10.
I'll bet you're a lot of help around the house, huh? You are? Don't you ever fix anything or do anything?
Yeah, sometimes.
What do you fix?
Oh, just any old thing.
Any old thing around the house. It looks like it needs fixing, huh? What does your daddy and mother do, Rhoda?
Well, my father's a painter and my mother's a housewife.
Your father's a painter? What sort of things does he do? Portraits?
No, he paints houses.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, Rhoda, what do you like to do best?
Well, I just like to make new friends.
Well, I think that's a wonderful thing, to make new friends. If you make lots of friends in your lifetime, you're going to be a very, very rich girl. Do you know what that means?
No.
Well, that means that friendship is really much more to be desired than money, and you'll be rich in friends. And Rhoda, what do you think you'll be? What do you want to be when you grow up?
I just want to get married.
That's all. Just want to get married. What kind of a man do you have in mind, Rhoda?
Oh, well, see, I'm short, and I want a man that won't call me shirt stuff and peanuts.
I think that's a reasonable request, that your husband not call you short stuff or peanuts. Anybody around here call you short stuff or peanuts?
Gary Judas and Eddie Abraham.
Gary. Gary. Do you call her short stuff?
No.
Do you call her peanuts?
No.
What do you call her?
A lot of names.
But not those two. Well, you don't marry him then, will you, Rhoda?
No.
All right. He says so, too. Hello, young man. You stand up here. Since we have big boys and girls today, instead of sitting down, I'll talk to you while you're standing up. You're Mr. Who?
Robert Del Campbell.
Uh-huh. Robert, I understand you're a businessman.
Yes, I sell papers at Crenshaw in Washington.
That's a very busy corner, and you're there every morning or afternoon or when?
No, I start selling at 4 o'clock and I end at 6:15.
Yeah, well, you know that this is an advertising plug that you're getting on the radio right now?
Yes.
You know what this time is worth coast to coast?
No.
You just talk there for about 20 seconds. That will cost you $890.
That much?
Yeah, how much do you make a week?
$5.
Well, maybe we better take a percentage for the next 10 years. What paper do you sell, Robert?
Premier.
Uh-huh. How does it sell these days?
Not too good.
How many do you sell between 4 and 6:30?
15.
15 papers?
Yeah.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Well, how much do you make per paper?
I don't. I make $1 a night guaranteed.
Oh, uh-huh. And do you get any tips?
Yes, yeah, sometimes.
Who tips, the men or the women?
The men.
Well, how does it happen that the women don't tip?
Because they have the nickel.
Oh, extra change, huh?
Yeah.
Well, a mirror is a mighty fine paper, and I'll bet you're a mighty fine businessman, Robert. What do you do with the money you make, the $5 a week?
I usually buy stuff.
What do you buy, for instance? You got anything that you can show us that you bought?
Yeah, this coat.
How much did the coat cost?
$10.
Well, that's pretty darn good. I bet you shopped for it yourself, too, huh?
No, I went with my mom and my dad.
Well, they picked it out and you paid for it.
Yeah.
Oh, brother. Okay, Robert, he's a fine young businessman. I think he deserves a lot of credit. What is your name, honey?
Janice Wells.
And Janice, how old are you?
10.
What does your daddy do?
Well, he works in the good humor business.
Oh, your dad's a good humor man.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet I know what you like to eat, huh? Ice cream?
Yes.
What's your favorite ice cream?
Sherbet.
No. Favorite ice cream is sherbet. Well, what flavor, I mean, huh?
Orange and vanilla.
Oh. What do you think you'll be, Janice? A good humor woman?
No, I don't want to be that.
What do you want to be?
I'm going to be an actress or a singer.
Oh, an actress or... Can you act?
Yes.
Well, we'll give you an audition. What do you want to do? Do a couple of dramatic lines for us.
Oh, how come you leave me when I love you so?
That's enough. How can you leave me, huh? Believe me, I won't leave you, honey. Well, here's another. How'd you like that acting, huh?
It was okay.
She put a lot of heart in that, didn't she? I think she was looking at you when she said that. What's your name?
My name's Rolf Polishar.
Who?
Rolf Polishar.
Polishar. What kind of a name is that?
I don't know. I got mixed up there somewhere.
Everybody ought to know where his name... Where'd you come from, anyway? I mean, your family, that must be a name from Middle Europe somewhere, huh? How about the first name, R-A-U-L-F?
That's my dad took that out of the alphabet.
You mean he just picked letters out of the alphabet at random?
Yeah.
Well, you might have been named Scroof. He got the wrong ones. What do you like to do best?
Thinking with radio.
You have a radio? Maybe you'll turn out to be a radio engineer. Would you like to be that?
Yes.
I'll have you meet our engineer right after we're off the show, and maybe you'll change your mind. Good luck to you, Ralph, and all of the five youngsters who are today. We want you to take back to your public school with you a table model radio for the classmates to enjoy, a table model radio from Stromberg Carlson, makers of the finest in television, and for each of you, a sensational new Whitaker-made Pixie camera with color film. Compliments of Pillsbury. Goodbye, kids.
Hey, you know, Art, ever since we got our new sponsor, Pillsbury, I've been in for an awful ribbing.
How's that, Jack? How's that?
Well, every time you talk about how easy it is to make a cake with Pillsbury cake mix, you say, why, even Jack Slattery can make one.
Well, what about it?
Well, it makes me look as though I'm incompetent or something. So right now, I'm going to mix up a Pillsbury white cake, and I'm going to do it blindfolded.
Blindfolded? Watch this, ladies and gentlemen. Bring on the blindfold. Put the apron over him, and Marty, give him the blindfold. Now he's walking back towards the table. Jack Slattery is about to mix a cake blindfolded. Now you got the tabletop in mind, have you, Jack?
I'm ready.
All right, what are you going to do first?
Well, all I do is reach for the Pillsbury white cake mix and pour it into the bowl here.
He's pouring it right in the bowl.
And I reach for the milk, and I measure out, I think that's a cup, isn't it? Yeah, I measure out.
You're pouring it down the front of my coat.
Sorry, old man.
That's good.
I measure out a cup of milk, I pour half of the milk into the bowl, I reach for the spoon, stir it up, and I'm on my way to a wonderful white cake.
How do you like that? He's making a cake blindfolded, ladies, and that proves it, that Jack Slattery could even mix up a Pillsbury white cake. But what's more, he can do it blindfolded, and so can you. Of course, you don't have to get a cake that's so tender and so moist. It's the kind of cake that'll have folks talking behind your back, asking how come you can turn out such a marvelous cake and what your secret is. So don't do it blindfolded. Don't do it Jack Slattery. But try Pillsbury white cake mix in your own kitchen. And while you're at it, try Pillsbury chocolate fudge cake mix, too. They're both wonderful.
And now Art Linkletter welcomes a special guest.
Our guest today is a man who has spent his entire life and works every day trying to save you money by teaching the American public how to avoid racketeers and swindlers. The head of the Better Business Bureau activities in these parts, Mr. Bob Sample. Bob, how are you? Well, let's see, Bob, it's been since last spring since we chatted about what the racketeers are trying to foist on the American housewives. What's the newest thing?
Well, the newest thing is called the Golden Gimmick.
The Golden Gimmick. Well, that's a gimmick, right. I know, is any kind of a device, and gold speaks for itself. But what is the Golden Gimmick?
Well, the Golden Gimmick is a door opener for a lot of salesmen that want to have some tricks to sell the housewives.
And what is the gimmick they use?
Well, in this particular thing, they indicate that they are making a survey or that the housewife will be able to help make a survey frequently. And it spoils a lot of real surveys. A lot of people are interested in helping any kind of a survey for the good of everybody concerned. And so when you find somebody that uses it as a trick to sell people something sometimes that they don't want, or to probably, shall I say, case the house.
Oh, you mean that a man might come to the door and you're anxious to be in the survey, and he asks you when you're at home and when the maid's at
That's
home and
right.
so forth. He can find out when you're not there.
When you're not there so that he can move in if he's so inclined.
Well, do they find out that most women want to be part of surveys?
Yes, they do. They're very interested. Survey seems to be a magic word, and therefore it spoils the real legitimate surveys when they have a lot of phonies operating.
So what should our listeners do when a man comes to the door and says, I want to make a survey?
If they can't show credentials of some real survey, some legitimate survey organization, don't answer any questions. And if they don't show you the credentials, don't give them any information.
Thank you very much, Bob. And now let's go down in the audience. I hope those words of wisdom will save a lot of you listeners from losing money that you don't have to. Now, we're going to ask for some volunteers who have questions for Bob Sample about things that they might have run across in their own life. And I see a sergeant standing up in the second row. Where are you from, Sergeant?
I'm from South Dakota. I live in Wilmington now.
And you live in what? What's your name?
Sergeant John Gleason.
Sergeant John Gleason. What would you like to ask Bob?
I've got a question here. I have received several offers for my oldest daughter, which is 2, to try out for television. I'd like to know what kind of racket that is.
You have a daughter 2 years of age, yeah. And people want to get her into television.
Yes.
What about that, Bob?
Well, that's the old counselor racket, where they tell people that they are interested in having their children for television and so forth. Then they get them in to charge them a fee to either have their pictures, the child's picture taken, or to come in and get training and so forth, and they usually have no connections whatever with any legitimate television organization or anything of that kind. Better save your money.
Your chances of his child getting into television would be about 1 in 1,000?
Well, that's a high percentage. I mean, it would probably be more like 1 in 2,500, because they seldom ever get in as in that fashion.
Sergeant, I hope we've saved you a lot of trouble and some expense.
Thank you very
Pick
much.
Out a number from 1 to 100.
99.
Well, that may win you something. Let's see. Here's another volunteer, a lady who's come up here. Her name is Mrs.
J. Durr.
From where?
Los Angeles.
What would you like to ask Mr. Sample?
Would you recommend a Lonely Hearts Club for a way to meet new men friends?
Lonely Hearts Club. Now, that is something that you read about in papers and you hear about all over the United States. Would you recommend that as a way for a lonely woman to meet a lonely man?
I certainly would not recommend it, because there have been times when people have been swindled out of money as a result of that type of organization.
In other words, while you can't prove it always on the...
Yeah, you can't always prove it, but nevertheless, they sometimes use that as a means to get the confidence of the person interested and then fleece them of any money that they may have.
It's not against the law for a Lonely Hearts Club to operate.
Well, it all depends. You have to prove a lot before you can prove that it is a violation of the law, but it just isn't a good idea to meet people in that fashion.
In other words, you folks in the Better Business Bureau would like to uproot them, but it's pretty hard to get rid of them.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Is that good enough advice for you?
Very fine. Thank you.
You pick a number from 1 to 100.
55.
Thank you very much. Let's get a man here over here on the left side. His name is Mr.?
John Durker.
Where are you from, John?
Monterey.
What do you do?
I'm a naval officer.
A naval officer in civilian suit today. What would you like to ask Mr. Sample?
Well, I've received numerous material through the mail, insurance material, and it's been from out-of-state companies. Is this legitimate business?
They want to get your life insurance?
Yes, sir.
By mail?
Yes, sir.
Oh, what about that, Bob?
The only thing I can do there is caution you to deal with an insurance company that is licensed to do business in the state where you live, because frequently if you do buy mail-order insurance...
you may have to travel many, many miles to another state to collect any claim you may have, because if they are not licensed to do business in this state, they don't need to answer any suits that there may come as a result of your situation. So in order to do it, you have to go back to the state where they are located.
Causing you a lot of expense and inconvenience.
Probably more expense than you'll collect.
How's that, Lieutenant?
Fine.
Is it Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Commander.
All right, sir. And you pick a number from 1 to 100.
23.
23. We have time for one more quickie. Let's go over to the other side, the man in the green pants. Your name is?
Andrew Fair.
Where are you from, Andy?
Washington, D.C.
And what do you do?
Well, I'm going to be a student.
You're going to be a student?
Yeah.
Well, what's your question?
Well, I was wondering whether the regulations in connection with rental fees to be paid to a real estate company in...
Renting a house?
Yes, with their...
In other words, you're a new arrival out here.
That's right.
Are there rules, Bob?
Well, there are not definitely any rules. Usually, these outfits charge a fee. And they will put it on the basis of perhaps $10 now and $25 additional if they find you something. Now, the $10 is not refundable. So if they don't find you anything, you're out $10. They do just enough to... make it possible to collect that, make it legal to collect that $10, and then you may still be out of the house and out the 10, too.
In other words, you shouldn't pay till you get something.
That's a good idea.
That's good advice. You pick a number from 1 to 100.
13.
What's the lucky number today, Jackson?
All right, our number is 4, and Andrew Fair was closest with 13.
Stay right up here, Andy. You've won for yourself a new house. Oh, no, wait a minute. Your prize is very lovely. It's an Evans Showcase, an ensemble of table lighters, one for every room in the house, two of the new sensational Evans automatic pocket lighters, all in a beautiful velvet-lined walnut case. Compliments of Pillsbury. And thank you, Bob Sample, for being our guest of honor today.
And now, listen to this.
You know, one good way for you gals to make a hit at home is to dress up the dining room table with warm, fragrant, homemade rolls fresh out of the oven. Now, I know it used to take a lot of work and experience to bake good rolls, but no longer. Where's that little blue and white package, fellas? Hold it up, will you, please? It says Pillsbury Hot Roll Mix on it. You'll find this on your grocer's shelves, and believe me, the finest homemade rolls you've ever tasted are in there. All the dry ingredients are in a package of Pillsbury Hot Roll Mix, and even a special protective packet of lively, high-vitality yeast to give you perfect results every time. To make the dough, you just add water to the yeast, stir in the mix, and it's that simple. The rolls, well, I've never eaten rolls more delicious. So take my advice, gals. Get yourself a package of Pillsbury Hot Roll Mix today. Well, looks like our time has gone by here. I had some other things in mind, but we'll be back on the air tomorrow giving a deserving singer his first break in radio. Until then, this is Art Linkletter saying goodbye from Pillsbury.
Thanks for watching, Hollywood. This is the Ron Goodell production. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
From October 6th of 1949 on ABC, The Pillsbury House Party, starring Art Linkletter. And that does it for this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I hope you enjoyed this trip back in time to radio's golden era. And I hope you enjoyed it enough that you'll make it a point to tune in again for more classic sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.